the best condition for both the one who teach and the listener to feel, you know, to be dull, hot, sticky. So when one enter, the Gompa make a prostration, so the Buddhist, the person who teach, and the person who receive the teaching, make prostration. Prostration is to seek the inspiration, you know, seeking the, asking the inspiration, and also to remember for the inspiration, and particularly to remember, you know, the originator, so the originator of the teaching, the founder of the teachings, the Buddha. So to make sure that it's not something made up by the person who teach, you know, just some kind of trip. You know? So to one make prostration to remember that this teaching has been originated. Buddha Shakyamuni, so turn the wheel of Dharma. So to remember, to recognize that, you know, so recognize and seek the inspiration. Then one take a refuge, so you may be wondering what some of you, what strange formula, it's kind of voodoo type, you know, it's not in voodoo, is taking refuge. Going for refuge to the three jewels, you know, from now till enlightenment, and by the merit accumulated through teaching and the person receiving, say, through listening, or in general, through giving, generosity, and so forth, may, for the benefit of sentient beings, achieve, you know, perfect enlightenment. So we're going for refuge. So that's the prayer, what we recite in Tibetan. Yeah, so refuge is the what mark, you know, as the Christian. The Christian is become a Christian. The person become a Christian when he's baptized. So the person is considered himself or herself Buddhist by taking refuge. Yeah, so one take refuge, entrusting oneself to the three jewels: Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So called the three jewels: Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So the one who take from the depth of one's heart, go for refuge, that is, can consider oneself Buddhist. Or sometimes, yeah, that's all. Consider oneself Buddhist. So don't need to go. Therefore, the beginning of teachings, the beginning of meditation, at the beginning of an important practice, or sadhana and so forth, and the Buddhist person first take refuge. Yeah. At the beginning of any practice, there is always one recite the formula of refuge. So then, as I mentioned during the retreat, so the type of practice, we emphasize the self-confidence, you know, the self-confidence. So self-confidence, so one build up self-confidence when one does things, yeah? So we have to do. The job, you know, we have to do the thing in order to know whether I'm capable or not. Of course, there are also things that just by thinking we know that we can't. Yeah, but it's particularly when we engage in something we do, and then we see that I can do it or I can't do it. So these. The practice of looking at the mind, for the sake of knowing the mind, is not, so the approach is not so conceptual or intellectual. Therefore, one does not need to have a, you know, to be intellectually gifted, intellectual background. Then one can, you know, then one can feel, think, you know, this is not for me. You know, I'm not capable. I'm not that intelligent. So things that certain things that require intellect, then you know, we can tell. You know, we can also easily become discouraged. we can difficult, we can say, you know, to become self-confident. But in this type of practice, is about what one is required. Required is to be attentive. Yeah, that's what is required. Not intellectually gifted. Not conceptually, let's say, intelligent, but to do it. So to be, what is required is to be disciplined, to be attentive. So disciplined, attentive, mindful. So, and then, because one is disciplined, but because particularly because one is mindful, so then one notice certain things. This is how we notice things when we are mindful. So, and what one notice is, one get used to. So therefore, after a while, that's why that was the meditator, the person, sees that getting used. So with regard to the bodily posture, so at the beginning. So one wonder whether, whether I'm capable of sitting like this, you know, day after day. Yeah? Again, one wonder whether I will reduce my distractions, whether I will be mindful. So, but then, as well, in order to know whether one is capable or not, with regard to these things I just mentioned, one has to do it. And so the more one sit, the more one realizes, sees, get used to. Yeah. So the more one is mindful, so the less one become distracted. Yeah. So the more one become used to. And so therefore the person knows, you know, I'm capable, I can do it. So the things that are supposed to train, so the training, the goal, so forth, is something very, is something achievable, so one can see. So one can see, you know, that one can get used. And that gives confidence. So this is how the person continue the retreat, continue to sit, so day by day realize, sees that, you know, he can get used to. So I can do it. So become more self-confident. Yeah. We can say it's a good method to strengthen, to build up one's self-confidence. So then, today, self-confidence, no, through patience. As we say, today we mentioned is patience that is needed. Yeah. So the patience is that which make the unpleasantness bearable. Yeah. So the thing that prevent to give up. Yeah. So patience is that which allows, I can say, that which establish, that which make possible effort. So without patience, no way, impossible. We cannot apply effort. And therefore, succeed. Yeah? So we succeed through effort. Effort is that make, you know, that which makes things ripen. So without effort, no achievement. Yeah? So anything, whether worldly or spiritual, is achieved through effort. Yeah? And the effort is possible because of patience. Without patience, we cannot, unless it is something that one is habituated, therefore it's effortless. therefore easy, and no hardship, so they won't need patience. Otherwise, when we are doing something new, whenever we are doing something new that we are not familiar, it needs effort. So to be successful with effort, to be able to apply effort, so we need patience. Yeah. So without patience, no way. That's why patience come first. And patience take care of the unpleasantness. That's the object. So we'll see later with regard to sensation, actually. Yeah. And this is the first thing that the meditator establish. Is the first thing that the meditator has to be aware of, has to know. Therefore, it is reminded, you know, it is told, reminded to those who forgot, told to the new one, patience. As Buddha said, the real recluse is the one who is patient, and the highest asceticism is patience. For the meditator, there are many, as we said, the sign of being a good meditator is not much how peaceful one feels, so how quickly one can settle the mind. So it's not about how good the person is in applying and be successful with the technique. That's not a sign of being a good meditator. So the sign of a good meditator is patience. So the one who is patient when one meditates, that's a good meditator. Yes. So it's the first stage. Yeah, it is the first stage of peace. Yeah, so peace begin with the mind that is not disturbed by unpleasantness. The mind that is not disturbed by unpleasantness, that is the characteristic of patience, so one bear, you know, endure. So the mind is firm, so doesn't move, doesn't complain particularly. So patience is that prevent that, you know, complaining. Yeah, that's what patience prevent, complaining. So complaining. In the case of retreat, you know, yes, we keep it to ourselves, you know. So inner complaining. So complaining, that's what stops. So complaining. So whenever we fail to be patient, and whenever we cannot bear the pain, then we begin to complain and lament. For the meditator, no, that is an hindrance, is an obstacle, is an hindrance, can focus, yeah. In the ordinary life, so make the life miserable, yeah. So, again, whether we do everything really, we can look it from the point of view of a meditator or in the context of everyday life. You know, all these can have both aspects, yeah, worldly and spiritual. So then, so all this, you know, in the context of meditation, the practice, patience is very important because in order to stop interruption, yeah. So the practice has to be a continuous practice without interruption because, see, meditation is to. Meditation has two meanings, really. Meditation can be defined by let it, make it be, or let it be. This is particularly in this type of meditation, make it be, let it be. So, you know, not suppressing anything, at the same time, not engaging, but let the experience arise, so one fully knows the nature, the characteristics, so the experience, yeah? Let it be, make it be. And the other aspect of meditation is what is most common in Tibetan, Gom. So familiarize, get used to, familiarize. So in order to familiarize, so beginning to familiarize with the sitting. So one sit, day after day, session after session, so keep sitting. So become familiar. One starts with that. So till it becomes, as I just mentioned before, till become used to familiarity. And then being able to sit, then also the mind sit. So the body sit and then the mind also sit. And one familiarize with that. So one become, develop familiarity with the mind. So in order to develop familiarity, habits, familiarity, we need to do things repeatedly without interruption, without interruption, again and again and again. So this is how we become familiar. So that's why patience. Yeah. So patience for the meditator is the thing that stops, interrupting. Therefore, continue no matter what the practice. Continue sitting. As I say, it stops. Yeah, it prevent giving up. Yeah, it prevent after a few sessions, or after one day, or after 2 days, thinking, feeling, that's enough. No, I can do it. It's too much. Yes. And also, it is that which makes the mind strong. Yeah, so it makes the mind strong. So the meditator also needs to have a strong mind. He cannot afford, a timid mind. So we approach with a timid mind, and then the mind becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. That's what that's the reason, when I say one, self-confidence, particularly in this context, when I say one becomes self-confident, because you will see, when you approach the retreat, for those who have done the retreat, for example, or also even in this course, after a few days, you may approach, for those of you who are new, you approach with a timid mind, no, I don't know. Then you'll see it as you become more patient, the mind becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. And you'll see that, So you will, you see, so the mind become more stoic, stronger, can do it, So I can make my mind stronger. So it's not a question of pondering, It's not a question of pondering, thinking, it's a question of, so someone make you do it, I guess, So other has the benefit of, the group, so you do it alone. After a few sessions, just give up. But when you are in group and there's someone who makes you make sure that you do it, so that then what you realize is that you get used to, and the mind so becomes stronger. So the so-called mind, So we have seen this morning the definition. Clear, cognizer, the cognizing characteristic, the clarity, what cognizing means, what clarity means. Then there's another aspect. So how does the mind perceive things? So the mind perceives things through by arising in the aspect. So the mind constantly arises in the aspect. So it is not that the mind is not, neither the mind going to the object, neither the object coming to the mind. So when we look at something, when you hear a sound, it's not that the sound coming to the ear, neither the ear going to the sound. So as it is said, exactly like the mirror, when the mirror reflects an image, it's not that the mirror goes to the image, neither the image sinks into the mirror. When we reflect the reflection of an image in the mirror, it's not that the mirror itself goes and catches the image, know the image, jump and goes into the mirror, right? It is simply the surface of the mirror arising the aspect, taking the aspect. Yeah, so the mirror, the surface arises in the aspect of whatever is faced. Yeah, so whatever comes, whatever that surface face, a flower, a face, you know, anything, it reflects. So in what sense? It takes the aspect, arising the aspect. So same the mind. So when we hear things, when we taste, when we see, feel and so forth, what is happening is the mind arising the aspect. Yeah? So the mind taking the aspect of sound, the mind taking the aspect of taste, and so forth. The mind taking the aspect of thought, yeah? The mind taking the aspect of happiness or unhappiness, the mind taking the aspect of anger, attachment. So the mind becoming, right? So the mind becoming, so like this, like that, means taking the aspect. So that's what we call, you know, perceiving, knowing. This is the way, this is how the mind knows, you know, things arising in the aspect. And then familiarizing with it. Yeah. So then, with regard to the mind knowing, you know, its object, perceiving or knowing. So there are three ways the mind knows, or there are three types of phenomena. There is the manifest phenomena, the hidden phenomena, and the extremely hidden phenomena. So the manifest phenomena are the phenomena, you know, the sight, sound, taste, again, you know, the sense object, external object. These are manifest phenomena, and we perceive them, the mind perceives them directly, you know, so directly as they are, without the media of mental image, yeah, concept. So, non-conceptually, perceive them as they are. So then, the hidden phenomena. So hidden phenomena are those phenomena in order to know them, one needs to, in this sign, yeah, or reasoning. Signs or reasoning. So like the example, by seeing the smoke behind the hill, so one knows that there is fire. No, because if there is smoke, so the smoke is produced by fire. Wherever there is smoke, there must be also fire. Yeah. So one does not see the fire but sees the smoke. So one sees the sign, and so there's an inference. So it infers that such a and it is unmistaken. So one generates an unmistaken knowledge with regard to something which is hidden, the person doesn't see, but through certain signs, realized, right? Through certain signs, one realized the object. And that is anything that we know through inference, through reasoning, yeah? Through reasoning, through thinking, inference, developing certain theory, and getting at the things, even though we don't actually see it, one realized fully, correctly. Yeah, those are hidden phenomena. And then the extremely hidden phenomena. The extremely hidden phenomena, those are things that we cannot get, not even through thinking, yeah, not even through analyzing, through reasoning. Like karma, yeah, for example. Karma, it is an extremely hidden phenomena that one realized, one can say, one realizes it through faith, yeah, through faith. Through faith, but here, the realizing through faith, you have to see that the person who says, so realizing things through faith, So there are certain things that we don't know and realize because the person told us. Yeah, like the Buddha. The Buddha, he told many things, for example. The Buddha told many things that we can ascertain through reasoning, through experience. You know, Buddha taught about suffering, the cause of suffering, certain method that get rid of suffering. The Buddha taught about, for example, the efficacy of mindfulness. You know, the power of mindfulness. You know, so how to detach, you know, from the experience and so forth. There are certain things that one can realize, experience directly. Yeah, so there are many things that the Buddha say, and through our own practice, can ascertain, realize. And then there are other things the Buddha say that we cannot realize, and then one believe. Why? He believed on the basis, yeah, so it's not just a mere belief, it's the belief on the basis that this person didn't cheat. You know, he's trustworthy, yeah, like our parents, right? So there are things, for example, you know, that, as a child, we wouldn't know, and we believe because our parents told us. You know, we didn't realize ourselves, they are hidden to us, and we believe because they are trustworthy. Yeah? So it is a trustworthy object, is a valid object. And we can call that knowing. Yeah? So do you know where you were born? For example, you know, I say, when were you born? Do you know? I say, yes. I was born the 10th of December, 50-something. Well, how do you know? You know? Were you there? So how do you know? Did you see yourself? No, my parents told me, right? Are you sure 100%? Yes. Because you know your parents, they will never, you know, it's a trustworthy object. You know? If they say you are born the 10th, unless, as I say, you know, sometimes the father can be drunk and report, you know, a month later, but normally he does straight away, yeah? So therefore, we were not there. It is a hidden thing, you know, that our date of birth, but we know through faith, we believe, you know, what our parents told us, and because they are not simply an ordinary person, it's not just a person, it's my father, my mother, to whom we trust, you know. No reason for them to tell us a lie. So, on that basis, yeah, this is just an example. Therefore, please don't bring up the fact that not always the parents are trustworthy. Of course. But in general, they are, yeah? So we don't take the exception, yeah, exception to the rules, you know? So the parents are always trustworthy object. So therefore, anyway, believe. So the extremely hidden phenomena are phenomena that are realized, one says, through faith. Hmm. And then, with regard to faith, then we see, when we'll talk about the 11 virtues, you know, the first is faith. So the direct perceptions, the direct perception sees manifest phenomena, and manifest phenomena are perceived through, you know, based on the so-called uncommon condition, you know, dominant condition, which for the eye consciousness is the eye, for the ear consciousness is the ear organ, so forth. So the uncommon condition for a sense consciousness to perceive its object is the organ, which is not the actual organ, but something behind, you know. There is something behind the eye organ, something behind the ear organ, something behind the body organ, something behind the nose organ, the tongue organ. Is something behind that is that allow, so that it become the condition for perceiving sight, sound, taste, so forth. Yeah. So it's not the organ itself. So that is the, then we can talk of different perception, or direct perception. So the direct perception, there is sense direct perception, mental direct perception, self-cognizer direct perception, and yogic direct perception. Yeah. So normally we experience, we ordinary being experience only, we can say, the sense direct perception. Yeah, our direct perception is regard to ordinary objects. And there is also the so-called, which is not shared by all school, the so-called Sautantrika school, the school that this teaching are based, yeah, the school that mind and awareness are based. For them, they pose it. So this school, the Sautantrika, pose it, the so-called self-cognizer, which is a cognizer. So for them, they say every time we generate an awareness of sight, we generate eye consciousness, whenever we generate ear consciousness, whenever we generate tactile consciousness, an awareness, yeah, of sight, an awareness of sound, and so forth, immediately after, there is another awareness which is aware of that awareness. Yeah? Not of the object sound, but aware of the awareness. Yeah? Of this awareness, of the sound awareness, of the sight awareness, of the tactile awareness. So, self-cognizer, and for them, so this school and the so-called mind-only school, they posit this type of consciousness, because for them, to remember, otherwise for them we won't be able to remember. If they were not the so-called self-cognizer, we wouldn't remember anything. Yeah. We wouldn't remember anything. But the other school, like the Madhyamika school and the other school, they don't accept this view. They say there is no need, because memory doesn't need to be registered. Yeah? The memory does not need to be registered by another consciousness in order to remember. There is no need to register, when we see something, when we hear something, we don't need another consciousness to register that. Yeah? Because in accordance to this, the other school, memory is a dependent arising reality. Yeah? We remember things through association, not by digging, not by going, by going into the past somewhere, into like a storeroom, like the mind that is the store. There is no place where all the memory, all our memory, are stored. That's what we may feel. There is no such a thing, a place in the mind. That's why, remember, this morning I say the mind is not like a container. Our mind is not a container. Each moment, the mind is, if it works, manifest moment by moment, and at a particular moment, there is just that moment. That's all. There's just that, only that moment. Yeah? That arise, in an extremely speed manner, arising, passing, very fast. Yeah? Giving the idea as if many things happening at the same time. Yeah? Like, for example, now you are looking at me, you hear, and you see me. Yeah, and you feel your body, and you feel the sweating. So you feel that you are simultaneously seeing me, hearing, and maybe smelling something, and then feeling the body, all happening together. Yeah, so that is a distorted perception. That is not so. Because it is happening very fast, and because our awareness is very weak, we don't see what is actually happening. Yeah. Because if one, that's why this morning, remember, I say that each consciousness, you know, each consciousness, the six consciousness, five sense, one mental, it perceives only its object, doesn't perceive another object. So, the eye consciousness perceives only shape and color, the ear consciousness perceives only sound, so forth. They are distinct, different. Yeah? So therefore, how it is that one see, hear, you know, feel, touch, and so forth, or may taste at the same time, it feels, as we say, it goes very fast. But what actually happened is that each time for a certain consciousness to manifest and to perceive or know, the other consciousness needs to cease. Yeah? To cease. As a certain consciousness ceased, the other consciousness arise. It's a constantly arising, ceasing or passing. Yeah, so ceasing and arising. If you concentrate really single point, yeah, really on my face, you know, if you concentrate single point on my face, then you would remember what I said. Yeah, the ear consciousness stops, doesn't function, because it's prevalent, is the eye consciousness that is concentrated. So only because they are inattentive. So we have the idea, so we can hear and see. What is happening is constantly this very fast arising over here, the arising of a visual and the passing and the arising of sound. Very fast, extremely fast, and we have this idea as if we are seeing and hearing at the same time. But if you really concentrate on my speech, let's say, on the sound, really concentrate, and I do something with my hands, I think you won't be able to see. You know, you'll be very inattentive, and therefore you will remember. If you have somebody ask, what did he do? I don't know, I was listening to what he was saying, right? Yeah. Or if you are really concentrated, let's say you see something in my face, oh, what's that? And I keep talking. If someone asks you, what did he say? I don't know. I was looking at his face, right? So, because there can be only one consciousness at a time, only one mind at a time, only one moment, rather. So one moment arise and the other pass. One moment arise and the other pass. So this is how. So that's why the mind is not like a container, it's a constantly arising and passing, arising and passing. So we cannot have two moments of the mind at the same time. That's why we don't have, you know, a store place. Things that let's go into the past. That's what we feel. And let's dig, you know. Let's do like an archaeological survey into, you know, my childhood. As if we can, you know, like go into a very old room, you know, dusting thing, you know. Oh yes, you know, that's what I did in the past when I was 5, you know. So the memory of 5 years very moldy, very a bit old, you know. So it is through association, yeah. It is the memory. It manifests through association. Because of a certain smell, it reminds us, you know, things. Because a face, it reminds something. Because a sound, it reminds. Because a thought, we remember. It's constantly, even when we try to, when we begin to listen, you know, when you are into the memory, you know, thinking, if you pay attention, it's always trying. You don't really go into you because of this. And this leads you to that, and that leads you to this. Yeah? So it's through association that we remember. That's why also we have to be careful this association is not always correct. They are not always valid. Sometimes we may remember things, we may generate image, things that we think is our memory, but maybe it may be not. Yeah? So through association, this is how we remember, but also through association, it may happen that we generate something that we may think, oh, that's what happened, but we know sometimes it's not true. You know? It didn't happen. So it is, you know, we believe it happened. So therefore, it's not always reliable. Yeah? It's not always reliable. Therefore, not always our memory is reliable. We have to be careful. Yeah? For example, it happened, you know, to accusing someone, having remembered, and then when you think back, you know, it wasn't. Yeah? So this is exactly not because it's dwelling somewhere there, but because it is through association. Yeah, that we remember. So, but that is the same with any, not only memory, but everything that manifests in the mind, manifests like that. Not because we have it, you know, not because we have a store mind, you know, a mind like a store place where all our anger is stored, where all our attachment is stored, or where all our jealousy is stored. That's what we may feel. So that is, Buddhist point of view, is not at all. Yeah, not at all. Anything that arises is always fresh. Yeah, everything that arises is always new and fresh. No matter how negative, yeah. What we call, the memory, including the memory, is always newly, through association, we remember something. It is new, fresh, yeah? That awareness, that experience is fresh. It's not like we brought it from the past, yeah? It's not that we went travel, we brought it from the past, and then we leave, and then take it again, yeah? And therefore, this memory is 10 years old, 50 years old, 60 years old, yeah? It doesn't have age. So memory is a concept, it's a conceptual mind, that arise dependently, you know, it depends upon this and that. Therefore, each time we can remember the same thing, but it's not the same. The same image, you know, a similar image. So a similar feeling, it may cause a similar feeling, a similar image, but it's not the same thing. It's always newly arisen. So it's a product. So this is product. Yeah. And therefore, because it is a product, you have to make a choice. Either it is there or it is produced. Yeah? So either a certain mental state is produced or it is there. Yeah? It cannot be both. And when you say produce, being product, means newly arisen. That is a product, yeah? So we don't make something that exists already, right? We don't make something which exists already. We make something which does not exist, so we make it. Yeah? Produce. So otherwise, you know, it'd be self-prod, you know, the issue of self-produce, you know, nothing is self-produced, yeah? Everything is newly produced, yeah? So that's what feels, you know, sometimes feel like anger, attachment, as if it is self-produced, in the sense that it's there, you know, each time it just come up, you know, each time it come up, it's there, and it come up. Yeah? So Buddhism doesn't accept this view. Each time, whenever anger arises, whenever attachment arises, whenever anything arises, is produce. It's a product, for it's always newly arisen. Yeah, it's always newly arisen. Yes, because a certain tendency and habit, yes, it comes again and again and again and again. Yes. But each time is always new. So all this, anyway, to say, that's what I was trying to say, is that the mind, like memory, so it's not that we actually dig and bring to the surface, you know, like digging the earth and unearthing, you know, dinosaurs, bones, or something like that. So then, the uncommon condition the uncommon, the dominant uncommon condition, the dominant condition for these things, for this perception, like the mental, so the mental perception, mental direct perception, that is like clairvoyance, yeah. So another direct perception, which is non-conceptual, direct, is clairvoyance, for example, knowing another mind, seeing another mind. And the yogic perception. So with regard to these, the uncommon condition is the mind itself. Yeah, it's not so. While with regard to sense object, the dominant or so-called uncommon is the eye, the ear. With regard to mental perception or the yogic perception or the but we leave aside self-cognizer. So is the mental. You know, the mind itself is the uncommon condition. So, and when we say the mind itself means the previous moment, you know, that is the substantial, you know. So when we talk about the preceding moment, that's what is said to be the substantial cause of the mind, yeah? This morning we mentioned cooperative condition, the mind can be influenced by anything. But then if we ask, what is the substantial cause of the mind? Yeah, what is the substantial cause of the mind? It is the mind itself. Yeah, and particularly the preceding moment, you know, of a particular mind. So as we say, the mind to function, so a moment of the mind sees, a next moment arises. So the cause of next moment is the seizing of the previous moment. Yeah. So as the previous moment sees, the next moment comes, the seizing becomes the cause of the next, you know, so, or the next moment. So the next moment also sees and give rise to another moment. So therefore, the preceding, you know, each preceding moment of the mind becomes the substantial cause of the next mind. Yeah. So therefore, if one goes backward and forward, there is no end to it. Yeah. So that's why that they explain how the mind is, you know, beginningless and endless. Beginningless, endless. Yeah. So each time a moment of mind sees, give a rise to the next moment. Each time the next moment sees, give a rise to the next moment. Therefore, this present moment of the mind, it has arisen because the previous moment. And the previous moment of the mind, it has arisen by the passing of the previous moment. So, moment. Therefore, going backward like that, one can go backward till the time of conception. Yeah? Till the time of conception. And then if one asks, what is, you know, the cause of the first moment, you know, the cause of the first moment of the time of conception is the last moment at the time of death. So the last moment of the mind at the time of death, when it ceased, become the first moment of conception. Yeah. Therefore, it is, so each time, so each time the mind sees, give a rise to the next. Therefore, without beginning, without end. So with regard to the mind, so the previous moment, it becomes the so-called dominant condition, the uncommon condition, so the substantial cause of the mind. Preceding moment, yeah, the preceding moment, right. So then, so conceptual, directly, so the mind, so perception and concept. So with perception, the mind perceives the object directly, yeah, as it is. And conceptually, so conceptually we perceive things, we know things through concept, yeah, or so-called mental image. So there are either so-called meaning generality or sound generality, or both of them. Yeah. So we generate concept with regard to what we know already. So we have concept with regard to what we have seen, what we have heard, what we have thought, what and so forth. So things that we experience. You know, we have concept that pertain to that type of, you know, to that, to things that we experienced. You know, so many generalities with regard to concept, with regard to things that we experience. And then the so-called sound generality, there are concepts that we generate when we read, for example, when someone tells a story, when someone tells something that we never seen ourselves. So we generate on the basis of what we hear, we generate concept. Oh, you know, someone tells a story, someone describes a certain place we never been, so we generate certain thoughts. Not based on what we experience ourselves, like in the case of meaning generality, but on the basis of what we simply hear. By hearing, we generate our own idea, an image, yeah? So sound. So therefore, our thoughts are either so-called meaning generality, sound generality, or both of them, mixed. And, but the thing is, with concept, when we experience object directly, the characteristic of the object of direct perception are so-called functioning things. Yeah, when we perceive things directly, are called functioning things. In the sense, they function, they change, they perform a function and they change, while the concept is a static, permanent thing. You know, exactly that's why they are called meaning, they are called generality. You know, it's a general idea. It's not the actual thing. It's like, as we mentioned during the retreat, it's like a picture, like a photo. So the photo of the place, the photo of the person is wrong, you know, so is mistaken, but it is correct. Yeah, so what we see in the photo and when we look at the place is correct. So both, they portray the same thing, place or face exactly. Yeah, they are dealing with the same object, a house, a face, a tree, depends what we are seeing in the photo. So when we look at the actual place, we look at the photo, it's correct. You know, so we see, you know, the actual, so we see the place. But it is said to be mistaken, because while the actual place constantly change, the photo is still the same. Yeah, so you can have a photo of a certain town, or you take with you, you know, you take a photo and you leave your town and you don't see it for 50 years. So each time you see the photo, that's your town. But in the meantime, your town become completely different, completely changed. Increasing population, the building is not there anymore. So you look at the photo, that's what you see. This is my town. But your town, the real thing, change. Yeah? But every time you think of your town, relate to your town, that's the object you relate. Something static doesn't change. Yeah? So each time, therefore, we deal with thought, we are dealing with static, you know, object, images. Yeah? So that's why not to pay, and this is our world. So most of our experience, most of our world is in the realm of conceptuality. You know, we deal, it's mixed with idea, opinion. So our world is the world of concept. Yeah, this is our world. No, so we do see things, you know, we do see the actual thing, but most of the time our mind is thinking. So therefore, we can say 70-80% of our experience is conceptual experience. Yeah, we don't really, you know, we never really live in the present. You know, never live in the present. We're always waiting for something, wondering about something. So constantly in the realm of concept, you know, we are constantly always in the realm of concept, and the concept, it has that particular characteristic. Concept, it creates, you know, it is said to be and that which create a sense of being. You know, when we create concept, the concept that a particular characteristic, it becomes static. Yeah? The concept immediately becomes static, it is repetitive. Yeah. So a typical concept, you know, the most strong, you know, the strongest concept is the self, you know, I, the self. Now that is a creation of the mind. It's a concept is created by the mind. It is very static. Therefore, you see, each time you think I, you know, I was 5 when I was 10. Still same, huh? See, I when I was 9. Every time we say I, we are referring to the same thing. Yeah, we say when I was 5, when I same was 5. I when I was 20. I same, always the same thing. Never change. Whether it is 5, whether it is 10, whether it is 20, whether it was happy or unhappy, is I am happy, right? I am unhappy, is but the I is all the same, right? Happiness and happiness are two different things, yeah? Two different experience. Happy, unhappy, so it's a change. But the I never I. So very static, you know, the I, the self, is very static. And that's why, and as we mentioned during the retreat, so each time we experience something, we are touched. Immediately it's followed by thinking. You know? Each time we experience something is never as it is, it's followed by thinking, thinking, thinking. Therefore, immediately we leave the experience and we relate with the thought. Yeah? The experience is forgotten, or we leave the experience and we deal with the concept. It's very hot, let's say. It's very hot. That's an experience. And actually the heat, if one keeps the body stable and one is mindful, actually one can notice the heat in the body, even when it feels very hot in the room. You see, actually, change. And you see, sometimes you feel fresh. Yeah? Fresh. Increase, decrease. You know? Very strong. Sweating and suddenly fresh. It is all this. But we don't see that. Because the moment the heat arises, immediately generate, well, aversion, you know, become annoyed and so forth, and we begin thinking, I'm hot. Oh, it's very hot. What is going to happen? Oh, geez, and so forth. So we begin to generate all this. We begin this thought process, and therefore it becomes a static heat. Yeah? So the experience becomes eternal. Yeah? So eternal, unchanging. And we can relate this, what I say at the beginning of this talk, self-confidence, yeah? Because when we do this type of practice, being mindful, being attentive, we are dealing with experience. Therefore, one sees it change, comes and goes, yeah? It's very organic, moves. Instead, the moment we concentrate too much on the thought, it's very static, yeah? It's like that, you know? I'm depressed. Depressed, depressed, depressed. Depression, as I say, you know, as we mentioned the other retreat, depression changes, moves. You know, one day one is, one day is not. But in the mind is, the mind build up that idea, no? As we say, the concept creates a sense of being. So the more the concept creates a sense of being, you know, like depressed, for example, or anything. Therefore, even all the thought of being short-tempered easily get angry, so one generates that thought. Therefore, even, so what is the problem with too much emphasis on thought? That even when we are not, you know, we think we are. So even when not, even when the person is not angry, the mind still think, no, I'm an angry person. Yeah. So even when one is not, the mind view oneself as being like that. As we say, the concept creates a sense of being. Therefore, even when the person is not depressed, but because he indulges too much, you know, indulges too much in, you know, I'm depressed, why I'm depressed, you know, so dwelling too much on the thought of being depressed, creates a sense of being. Even when one is not, he feels, yeah? So the experience, with regard to the experience, there are times when certain thing is not there, yeah? So there are times when anger is not there, but the person thinks, basically I'm an angry person, even when I'm not, yeah? That basically I am, right? This thing. Even when the person is happy, but if the person gets into this, you know, into the process of think I am depressed, even when one is not thinking, but I'm basically depressed. I'm basically a depressed person. Yeah. And that's what makes difficult, you know, then to change it. Yeah. Because that's what I am. So this what I am is in the conceptual realm. You know, belong, you know, to the conceptual real, and that is the characteristic of thought. Yeah. So thoughts, on the other hand, are very important. So we do need the thinking, we need the thought, but we also need to know how they work, you know, how they function, you know, their nature. So to be able to, you know, let go, so not to indulge too much. So therefore we know things directly, you know, through direct perception, and we know things through concept. So so then when they explain the mind, the mental factor. So the teaching on mind, the mental factors, belong to this text called Lorik, you know, Mind and Awareness. So first one explain the perception and conception and so forth, and then mind and mental factors. So that's why we mention a bit the perception and conception. So our topic is, so the mind and mental factors. So the so-called mental factors are 51, but of course there are more. So in these 51 mental factors, for example, they are not included love, compassion, or patience. So there are included certain mental factors. Yeah. So the first, anyway, the mental factor that are together, you know, with the main mind. So we have main mind. So the main mind are the six main, the six consciousness. As we said, the eye consciousness, ear consciousness, so forth. These are called primary mind. Yeah. So this primary mind knows its object. The general, apprehend. The general state, let's say, of this, you know, of the object. So the eye consciousness, as we said, it perceives just shape and color. This the ear just sound. Then, what determines the quality of, you know, our perception? That is mental factors. Yeah. So the mental factors are that which color, you know, the perception. That which flavor, you know, the experience. And this mental factor, they share five similarity. So whenever there are same entity, a different name. Yeah. So it's not that we can have mind and mental factor separately. They can never separate. They come together. Every time there is a main mind, it's mental factors. So every time we see something, we hear something, immediately we generate feeling, we generate like, dislike, or irritation, or attachment, and or fate, and so forth. Yeah. So the mental factor, anyway, this main mind and mental factor, in terms, they share five things. Yeah, the five things, time, you know. Mind and mental factors, they arise simultaneously, the same time. Yeah, it's not that the main mind arises 1 minute, you know, before, and the mental factors a minute later. No, whenever we see something, immediately there is a sensation, either pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. There is a reaction, so it is immediately flavored by something. Yeah. So then, the same basis, they share the same basis. In the sense, if I hear, when the eye consciousness sees something, and then when it generates, like, for example, a pleasant feeling, the pleasant feeling, which is a mental factor, and the eye consciousness, the base is the same, the eye organ. So they are both base, you know, they share the same base, the eye organ. They share the same object, shape and color. Yeah? They share the same aspect arising in the aspect, you know, of shape and color. And they share the same substance. So in the sense, we cannot have the main mind, for example, happy, and the mental factor unhappy. So the same, you know, they share the same substance. So just to mention that. But now, what is important for us, the so-called, so the first five mental factors are the omnipresent, yeah? They are called omnipresent because they are always present, except in particular case, like at the time of death, they are latent, dormant. Yeah? So these are intention, yeah? So intention, attention, feeling, contact, and discernment. So if these five mental factors are not present, you know, aren't present, we cannot experience the object. So if intention is not present, the mind cannot be directed towards anything. So when we think, there is intention. So to see something, there is the intention is like a magnet. So intention is not a concept, is the mental factor that which moves the mind towards the object. Yeah? That which moves the mind towards the sound, towards the sight, or towards the thought, towards whatever. So without intention, the mind cannot go here and there. That's this. Intention, it directs the mind towards the object. Yeah? Therefore, all our activity, whether it is mental, whether it is verbal, or whether it is physical, is always preceded by intention. So without intention, we cannot speak. Without intention, we cannot move. Without intention, we cannot think. Yeah? Can think, speak, or act. Yeah. So intention is the general thing. Then attention is that which sees the detail, that which fully experiences. So the eye consciousness, let's say, is directed towards the face, towards the tree, towards the shape and the color, towards this, towards the, towards a an external object, yeah, towards a sight. But then, in order to see the detail of the face, the detail of the flower, that is the task, the function of attention. So attention directs simply the mind towards the object. Yeah, it direct moves the mind towards these, towards the object. Then, what fully experience the object? No, the characteristic, the details, that is attention. And so, that which moves the mind here instead of there, that's with this. So discernment is another mental factor. The discernment or discrimination is that which differentiate here instead of this. So For example, if I look, you know, in this field, you know, in my visual field now, there is a microphone, there is the rosary, there is the table. So in order to see the microphone, the mental factor of discrimination is to differentiate between the rosary, the recording device and everything, and, you know, leads the mind only, you know, towards the microphone. Make space, differentiate, so that I can perceive the object. So when I look, I see many objects. What allow me to see this instead of that? The rosary instead of the microphone instead of the table, that is discernment, the mental factor of discrimination. Yeah? And what allow to experience? Yeah? The pleasant. So what allow to experience? That is contact. Contact. So without the mental factor of contact, there won't be any experience. Contact is that which bring together the object, the organ, and the consciousness. Yeah. So the eye organ, and the referent object. So that which bring together the consciousness, the sense consciousness, the organ, the eye, for example, and the object, that is contact. So without contact, we cannot experience. And then sensation. So without sensation, we cannot actually, without sensation, we cannot have experience the unpleasant, the quality, yeah, the quality, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Yeah. So therefore, we cannot have. So if intention is missing, the mind cannot be directed towards anything. Yeah. If intention is missing, the mind cannot be directed towards anything. If attention is missing, we cannot remember anything. If discrimination is missing, we cannot see really anything. We cannot hear anything, because we can hear. We could have just a rush of sound. You know, we could have just all these objects, but we cannot see this and that. So we cannot see this instead of that. So without contact, we could not experience. And without sensation, we cannot have experienced the quality, of the experience. So we cannot feel pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So therefore, these are called omnipresent. These are must be always present. There are always present. You know. So in all our activity, this is called omnipresent mental factor, always there. Yeah. So that's why we can see. That's why we can think. So that's why we can experience things. Without these five things, cannot experience anything. Okay. I think that's all for tonight, and then we continue tomorrow. And particularly, these two are very important. Within these two mental factors, at intention, actually three, yeah? There are three very important for us. Intention, attention, and sensation. These three mental factors are very important. So now, let's dedicate the merit tonight. Rededication, take care. So dedication is then the last page. One thing. Come on, give us a break. Yes. So if you have some question, you can write. Put a piece of paper, write your question, just leave it here, or give it to Sonia maybe, or leave it here. And then just maybe before the evening teaching or after, I'll see which one to answer. So I see which are more relevant, and try to answer some of the questions. So three default please. Should be related to the topic, yeah? The question related to the topic. Yeah, so. So dedication of prayers, the dedication and prayers. Dedication is like a prayer with substance. Something to offer. So dedication is a prayer with a seed, with seed. And then there is a prayer with just a wish, yeah? But whether it is a dedication, so whether it is a prayer with a seed, with something that can sprout, or whether it is just a mere, simple prayer, here, as a Buddhist, of course, now we are talking of being a Buddhist, yeah? So being in this particular place, Bodh Gaya, which is a very holy place, for a Buddhist, so this is the place where Buddha achieved enlightenment. So, yes, when you go, it doesn't look so holy when you go out, actually, but it is. Maybe if you go very early in the morning, you may feel it. Or if you spend the night, you may feel it. During the day, difficult. But it is. So it is a holy place, therefore there is the power of the object. Yeah. Then there is the power of the prayer. So the power of the prayer is determined by the lifestyle of the person. So if one make prayers, and if one pray, but one's life is very unrestrained, non-virtue, constantly cursing and abusing, still religious and making prayer. So those prayers, they will never be fulfilled, as we know that. So it's not enough to have faith in order for the prayer to be fulfilled. It is said that for prayers to be fulfilled, it is the lifestyle, it is the keeping of morality, the keeping of ethic that makes the prayer fulfilled. Yeah? And that is, so therefore, when one keeps a good morality, that's why we ask whom. Often, we ask the priest to pray for us, the nun to pray for us, or anyone who regards as a holy, a virtuous person, a good person, is like, can you please pray for me? I can't, I'm not in the position. I know my prayer won't be fulfilled. Yeah? So that's the condition. Therefore, in retreat, because in retreat, or half retreat, whatever, here, we're trying to be disciplined, trying to be virtue, try to be have a good ethic, then that's the perfect condition for the fulfillment of prayer. Yeah, this is the best, therefore this is the best time to make prayers. So to dedicate the merit, as we read here, and also to meditate, to make prayer personal prayers. It's okay. So first we read the general dedication. May all beings everywhere, pray by suffering of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighted down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored and find their repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food, may the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth and joy, may the fallen find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains, a bountiful harvest. May all medicine be effective and all some prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from the elements. Whatever disease that are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound to be free. May powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. And then traditionally, one also makes this dedication as a Buddhist person. Through the merits of these virtuous actions, May I quickly attain the state of Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that is not arisen, and may that which is arisen not diminish, but increase more. And then make your silent, personal prayer. So as you pray, make your prayer. So particularly, for those people who are very dear to you, so you pray particularly for those. Dedicate the merit for them, pray for them.